So the more of a business detective you are, the better you understand the way your best prospects think and the problems that they have, the more likely you will be able to deliver solutions and suggestions to them that they can use in a language that will make sense to them, which is helpful, but also helps them see that you get them, that you are the person they need. And that's really the connection we're trying to make with all the marketing, is for it to land on the right person's radar at the right moment, because timing is crucial when it comes to marketing, and in a way that they can say, oh yes, this is exactly what I need. I'm going to buy it right now. I'm going to take advantage of that free consultation right now. So that content needs to speak directly to them, and it can be delivered in multiple formats.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Elise Bennin, an author, a business coach, a national speaker, the founder of MarketingMentor.com, and an adjunct faculty at Pratt Institute and the Maryland Institute College of Art. Elise is also the author of 7 books, the host of 2 podcasts, the Marketing Mentor podcast and the How Design Live podcast, and she's also a prolific blogger. As she points out in the interview today, she is indeed a content machine. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, just click the blue Take a Peek Inside button and take a peek. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and I've put together some stuff that's especially for you, my podcast audience. In our discussion today, Elise talked to me about her Smart Marketing Foundation. We also talked about cloning your favorite client, and she described her 3 key tools for marketing: strategic networking, targeted outreach, and high-quality pain point, bat signal content marketing. Sounds fascinating. So without further ado, then let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Elise Bennin. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Savannah, Georgia in the USA, Elise Bennin, who's an author, a business coach, a national speaker, and founder of the MarketingMentor.com and an adjunct facility at the Pratt Institute and the Maryland Institute College of Art. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Elise. It's a privilege to have you as a guest.
Thank you. It's my privilege to be here.
Terry Trespecio, who we had on episode 152 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, she suggested we interview you, Elise. So big hello to Terry.
She's an excellent friend of mine.
Yeah, that's good to hear. We had a lot of fun in her episode talking all things presentation and speaking. So yeah, I'm looking forward to today's interview. So
me too.
You're also the author of 7 books, the host of 2 podcasts, the Marketing Mentor podcast and the How Live, is it How Live or How Live?
How Design Live podcast.
How Design Live, that's it, podcast. And you're also a prolific blogger. So I'm really looking forward to unpacking some of that some more today. Obviously, you do a lot of content production. But before we start talking about all things marketing, podcasting and producing content, let's find out a little bit more about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
So the most pivotal moment, let me start there. The most dramatic moment was in 1988. It was April and it was a Friday afternoon and I was in the second job I had out of college and my boss called me into the conference room and fired me. And he was very nice about it, actually. He basically just said, thank you very much. And he handed me an envelope that had a check in it. And I understood that I was being fired. And I was really angry, even though looking back on it now, that's 30 years ago, basically. I realized that I did everything I could possibly to get myself fired. Because I didn't know how to quit, essentially. And so he fired me and I was so angry that I decided I was never working for anyone again. I was 27 years old and I had to come up with something to do. And so that was really a very important period in my life because I guess I was raised to be self-employed. Everyone in my family was always self-employed. So it was kind of in my blood. It made sense to me and it was probably just a matter of time. And so I had studied Spanish and French in college, but the two jobs that I had gotten after college had nothing to do with language, and I wasn't really sure what to do with language. So when I was fired, I had this idea, because all of my friends, I was living in New York at the time, were creative types, artists, actors, musicians, and they were all really disorganized. And I was a little bit more organized. So I thought, let me become a professional organizer. Mm-hmm. And literally, I sat with people in the middle of their piles of paper and helped them figure out what to do with their piles. And little by little, every single time, what happened was at the bottom of the pile, when we would eventually get there, there was something that had to do with marketing and self-promotion that was not getting done. And it became clear to me that the clutter was just an obstacle to a deeper problem, which was marketing and self-promotion. And so little by little, I just started helping creative people market their services. It's kind of common sense and it's very simple and basic, but a lot of people have a bad taste in their mouth about it. They don't like to do it. They don't want to do it. And so I've evolved a business over 30 years called Marketing Mentor, where I basically teach creative people how to market their services.
Hmm. That's a really fascinating story. I like the approach of clearing up the clutter and you discovered there were deeper underlying problems.
Yeah.
Hmm. So when did you realize then that you actually had a passion and a talent for marketing and presenting it in a way, as you say, that makes it actually quite easy to understand and to execute?
I think it was a very gradual process, but as I started helping people, I didn't know who I was focused on at the time. In fact, I think it took me about 15 years to actually find my niche. If I had found it earlier, I may have been more successful earlier, but I didn't even know that's what was important to do. And that is actually a big part of what I teach people how to do is find their niche. Because once you find your niche and you find what I think of as your people, basically, if you find your people, these are the people who respond most positively to what you have to offer or the way you offer it. Even if there are lots of other people offering it, each of us has a very specific and personal and almost idiosyncratic way of presenting what we offer. And that's what I try to help people find within themselves and then bring out in their marketing, in their content, so that it attracts the people who they are best suited to serve.
Yeah, that's great. Well, tell us a little bit more because I've just come from a little masterclass group I'm involved in where we had a long conversation today around identifying your ideal client and actually getting a definition of your ideal client down on paper so that it's not something abstract or something in the ether or some concept in your mind. It's actually something more concrete that you can work with. So talk to us a little bit about how you go about, identifying and helping people identify the niche that they are best suited to serve.
So I think of the niche as slightly different from the ideal client. One, we would say, is a subset of the other. Mm-hmm. And you can choose and look for your ideal client first and then find the niche that it belongs to or he or she belongs to, or the other way around. But so when I help people do this, there are two different approaches. One is I have a worksheet actually called the Clone Your Favorite Client worksheet. So if you've been working with people or businesses for a while, and a lot of times what happens is people think they have to choose a niche from all the different types of businesses that they've worked with, and they feel very all over the place and scattered. Like, how could I possibly choose? I love all of them, or I hate all of them, or I don't know which one is better, right, or more viable. But if you can choose a client that you especially enjoyed working with, and then identify in as much specific detail as possible the qualities of that person, the qualities of the business, the problems that they came with, all sorts of everything from demographics to personality traits that you're looking for, then if you can picture that person and put names to the qualities, then you're much more likely to recognize them when you come across them or to go looking for them and know what you're looking for in the first place. So I think that's the first step. Maybe that's what you did in your masterclass today, but the idea of really getting clear in your own mind who it is you're looking for, sometimes it's called a persona, right? But who are you looking for? And then where are they? How can you find them? Where do they gather online? What conferences do they go to? What do they read? And the problem I think people have is that it is too vague and they refuse to focus. But once you focus and you become a quote-unquote specialist in a particular area or a couple different niches, then you become more confident and more competent. And those two things go together. And so that's why I think it's really important to focus, because if not, you may not be as confident as you could eventually be.
Hmm. Yeah, I really like that. I like the approach because, as you say, it was the sort of thing we were working on this morning, but I'd call it an ideal client workshop, and I've got worksheets and so on. But I love the clone your favorite client idea, because one of the things that people sometimes struggle with that exercise is they feel it's too abstract to start with. And my suggestion then is think of your favorite client and what characterizes them. So, and I've forgotten my train of thought right now. So let's backtrack a little bit. So one of the things you mentioned there was going on to things like where you find them and so on. Now I've got my train of thought back. I know what I was going to ask. One of the where I find resistance a lot with people doing this kind of exercise is, as you said earlier, they think, well, I can work with these people, I can work with those people over on the other side, I can work with the people in another particular area, and if I focus narrowly on a niche, then I exclude all these people. And I often say, well, no, it's the focus is in terms of building your own marketing and defining where you're looking for clients and how you market to them and how you develop your products and services. But if somebody then comes in and doesn't fit that profile, you still have the choice to say yes or no. This thing is not a rule to say you have to say no to somebody else if you think you would like to work with them. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. People think very concretely. And so if you say focus or choose a niche, they think, oh, I've got to choose one and it's forever, which of course it's not. And it doesn't even have to be one. As I said, I mean, for me, it took 15 years and it was a very gradual process where little by little over the years, remember, it's taken me 30 years to get here. So over the years, I have narrowed little by little to focus on what I'm calling creative professionals. So it's an umbrella in a way. And that's one way I try to teach people how to look at a niche as an umbrella. And who fits under the umbrella, and how can you tie together the different types of people or businesses or industries that fit under the umbrella, and then use your marketing to educate about that umbrella and attract the people so that they feel included. And yes, I would say sometimes you are going to exclude or alienate certain people, but that's okay, because if you've chosen a viable niche, there are plenty of prospects for you.
That's right. So I think that's a really important message. So thanks for elaborating on that for us. Now,
and actually, let me add a little something there, because I think not only are there plenty of prospects, markets are deeper than you imagine them to be. And so if you find a market that people respond positively to your message and they're saying, yes, this is what we need, you will probably be surprised how many of them there are, or how many opportunities there are to find these people. So that's part of the concrete thinking also, is I'm just going to choose one niche and there's not going to be enough for me there. And that is rarely the case.
And the other thing, of course, I think you mentioned in the early part of the discussion about the relationship part of working with the client or the niche. And this morning there was another little snippet of conversation that I thought, well, that really highlights something. So one of the businesses that's doing really well there, it's a serviced office, and they have clients in those serviced offices, and they do a lot of marketing to try and get more new clients in there. And the comment was made that, oh, we've got all these clients that are in the serviced offices that are expanding their business, so they're putting on more people, so they need more offices. So we're actually focusing on converting new business with existing clients, which, you know, prompted for me the old saying of, it's so much easier to sell more to existing clients that you already have a relationship with, that already love you and know you and trust you. So that just highlighted that to me as well. And if you have the niche focus, then, you know, the way you did it in the very early start of identifying other opportunities that you can help those people with becomes so much easier.
I would also say, in response to the idea of how much easier it is to sell to existing clients than to convert new clients, I find that people get a little lazy in marketing or not marketing to their existing clients, feeling like, well, we've got this one, so we should be focused on new ones. And I actually had a situation today with a client who was telling me that her client had recruited a different design firm to do a different type of design than she and her firm does, because they had no idea she could do both. And this happens very often, where your client basically pigeonholes you and puts you in a box in their mind based on what you do for them, even though there's probably so much more you could do and they have no idea. So it's really important to keep the marketing going and keep the conversation expanding with existing clients, so that they're aware of how much you can bring to the table.
That's a really good point. I'll explore a little bit more with you about structure in marketing. And I know you've got lots of little structured things that I'd like to learn more about. But following on from what you've just said, you know, the structure in marketing shouldn't finish with having onboarded a client. It should continue with those clients that you already have. And one of the things that really annoys me is all these, and this happens a lot in the consumer space, where there's all these offers that are around, okay, 10% discount, or you get a month for free, or you get something else that they offer, but it's only available to new clients. So as an existing client, you're excluded from that. So, you know, you've got to wonder about that strategy.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think it's really important to just keep evolving with the clients and keep evolving the relationships and keep learning about how their needs are changing and what they can afford, or, you know, anything you can about cultivating the relationships.
Great advice. So I mentioned that you have a lot of structure in your marketing. You have frameworks for the marketing. I know you've got one that's 30 minutes a day for business owners who feel that they don't have enough time to really become full-time marketers, let's say, and in 30 minutes a day they can do certain things that will propel their marketing forward. So talk to us a little bit about some of those structures and some of those frameworks.
Sure. So what you're talking about are the marketing plans that I create and sell in my online store, which I'll just plug it, which is marketing-mentor.com. And every year, somehow, I come up with a simpler marketing plan than the year before. And the idea there is to create a system and a process for people who are basically running a business. They're not full-time marketers and they don't have full-time marketers. So they have to find a way to fit the process into their day-to-day life and do it in a way that fits their personality. So those are two kind of high bars to cross. But that's what I try to do with these marketing plans. So the 30 minutes a day is really the minimum I recommend that people carve out. And I call it me first, because you really have to put your business first, not the client work first, if you're going to succeed. I think of your marketing as your future and your current client work as your present. And yes, of course, you have to do the client work because they're paying you the money, but it isn't really more important than your marketing, even though it's more tangible in the moment. The marketing is much more long-term. It's looking into the future. It's aspirational. And it's you saying, this is where I want to take my business. And if you don't do that, then you'll be basically following it wherever it goes and taking whatever comes along, which is my way of saying getting word of mouth. I think word of mouth is a euphemism for taking whatever comes along, basically. So the 30 minutes a day is first thing in the morning, ideally, at the beginning of the week, especially, but a way to get yourself into the habit of working on your business as opposed to in the business. And so the current marketing plan, what I'm calling the simplest marketing planner for 2019, does just that. And it gives you three marketing tools to integrate into your week or month. And no more than three, essentially, because part of the problem is that there are way too many ways people can market their services, and it's paralyzing, essentially. So if I say you can only use these three marketing tools, they're the best ones that work most effectively together. If you do it, if you follow the instructions, marketing works. That's the beautiful thing about it. There's nothing magic about it. It just works if you do it.
Yeah, great advice. And I love the idea of focus. So do you prescribe the same three for most of your clients, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll tell you what they are.
Okay. That was going to be the next question.
Absolutely. No, that's not a secret. It's not a secret. So this plan assumes that you have a couple things in place already, and these are not the marketing tools. These are the things that you have as a marketing foundation. So a website, what I think of as a marketing smart website, which what makes it marketing smart is that it's about your clients and their needs and the problems that they have that they come to you to solve with your service or your product, right? So marketing smart website isn't all about you. It's essentially all about them and how you help them. So that's one thing that you have in place. And or part of your online presence is your LinkedIn profile. If we're selling consulting services or design services, then really you have to be on LinkedIn, and your LinkedIn profile needs to align with your marketing smart website. So that needs to be in place as well. And you have to have a niche. You have to know who you're focused on. Because if you don't know who you're focused on, you don't know who you're talking to, you have no idea what to say, you can't create any content. So you have to pick a niche to start with, which, as you said very rightly earlier, it's not that that's the only type of business you're going to work with, but that's what your marketing is for. That's what you're pursuing. That's what everything that your efforts are doing is going into. It's for your marketing, but it's not necessarily the work that you're doing. I do agree with that distinction.
Yeah, really good point. So I love the smart website being, it's not about you, it's about the clients and their needs. And I'm guessing that your philosophy for the LinkedIn profile is very much the same, even though
absolutely
it's your profile.
Absolutely. And so so your title is about them and what they need or the problem that you solve. And the beginning of your summary is also about them and the problem that you solve. And then you go into what you do and how you help.
Yeah.
So I still haven't told you what the three tools are. So once you have your online presence and your target market, then you can put the three tools in place. And they are, number one, strategic networking. Number two, I'll come back to each and explain them. Number two, targeted outreach. And number three, high quality pain point bat signal content marketing. All right.
Yeah.
So strategic networking, that's not just any networking. That's not your grandfather's networking. That's very strategically choosing the places to go where you're going to find the people, your people in your target market. What events do they go to? What networking events do they go to? What trade shows do they go to? That's where you need to be. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And of course, then, you know, to do that, and you said that knowing your niche was one of the foundations. So knowing that helps you figure out, well, where are these people going to be? Where will I find them?
Exactly. Because a lot of people, what they do is they go to a local chamber of commerce or a business card exchange, and they're bombarded by people who are, you know, shoving business cards into their faces, and they think, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be perceived that way. This doesn't work. Networking doesn't work. And the problem is they're doing it all wrong. So the right way to do it is strategically. And the other piece of strategic networking is, I'm using the analogy lately of being a business detective. You go as a business detective, meaning you have your questions and you want to learn about the market. And so all of your conversations are not about selling anything at all. It's all about research and asking questions about the problems that they have. And by the way, these are the problems that you can help solve, but you're not focusing on the solutions. You're not going to give that away. You're focusing on the problems and getting them to talk about their problems. And they're going to think you're an excellent listener because you're asking them to talk. And that's really what people want anyway.
That's right. And I love that for so many reasons. But the thing that to me it says is, apart from being an excellent listener and apart from building relationships through doing that rather than pushing business cards in people's faces, it also gives you so much more information in terms of what the challenges and frustrations and needs of the ideal client or your niche is, and then gives you ideas for where you might be able to help.
Exactly. And that's the perfect segue into marketing tool number two and three, actually, but let's go to two next, which is targeted outreach. Because what you learn by talking to people in your networking is exactly what you're going to put into your outreach messages. So here I'm talking about email, LinkedIn invitations, phone calls, voicemail, snail mail, all the different ways you can reach out to people in the most hyper-customized, super-tailored, personalized way you can, using what you learned about what their problems are and implying that if they have that problem, you're the right person to talk to. You're the perfect person to talk to because you can help them solve it.
Yeah, that's very smart. And in a way, that's kind of part of the strategic networking, isn't it? Because it's one of my understanding of a strategic networking would be following up on conversations that you've had.
Absolutely. So those are the first two. And then the third tool is what I called high quality pain point bat signal content marketing. So content marketing is very pervasive now. And really, it's the same as what I was saying about the Marketing Smart website. It's not about you, it's about them. So your content, your blog posts, your podcasts, your articles, your white papers, your freebie that people get when they sign up on your email newsletter, all of that content is about the problems they have and your tips and your suggestions and your solutions for how those problems can be solved without giving everything away, obviously. But as a consultant, for example, I am a consultant, and I'm not afraid of giving away my secrets, my quote-unquote secrets, because truthfully, if you can listen to this podcast and do everything, you don't need me, right? The problem is if you can't, if for some reason something gets in your way, if you can't bring yourself to do it, if you keep putting it off, if you need accountability, then you need me, and I'm happy to help. But if all you need are the ideas, take them, because they don't belong to anybody. Right. So that's my perception or my perspective on content.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that approach. I often have conversations with people where they say, but if I give away things for free, people won't engage me. People won't buy my services or my product. And I give them exactly the response you've just given us there in answer to that.
Yeah. No, there's nothing precious about it. And I think, you know, I think of generosity as a marketing tool. I think that the more generous we can be with what we have, the more people will be open and not defensive when we reach out to them, when we follow up with them, when we have something to offer. They'll be grateful and they may even want to reciprocate and they may even feel guilty like, oh, I better pay them something. I better engage them because they've given me so much.
Yeah. And I take the approach that if you really impress people with the information you've given away, then the idea really is that they're so impressed that they say, wow, I wonder how great it's going to be if I pay that person.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, you know, some people will take the information and say, yep, that's good enough. I understand all that. I can implement that and that's fine. Because Those people will actually talk about you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll talk about you to somebody else and they'll say, oh, I got this worksheet from Elise and it's fabulous. I've implemented. So somebody else will get that worksheet from you and say, oh, I can't do that myself. I better get Elise to help.
Exactly. It all comes around.
So tell us a little bit then about the kind of content that forms that high-quality pain point bat signal. I'm fascinated by that title.
Right. That's the bat signal that attracts the people who you are best suited to serve. So the more of a business detective you are, the better you understand the way your best prospects think and the problems that they have, the more likely you will be able to deliver solutions and suggestions to them that they can use in a language that will make sense to them, which is helpful, but also helps them see that you get them, that you are the person they need. And that's really the connection we're trying to make with all the marketing, is for it to land on the right person's radar at the right moment, because timing is crucial when it comes to marketing, and in a way that they can say, oh yes, this is exactly what I need. I'm going to buy it right now. I'm going to take advantage of that free consultation right now. So that content needs to speak directly to them, and it can be delivered in multiple formats. I mean, as I said, email, articles, blog posts, podcasts. And as you said, I have two podcasts, and that's exactly what I'm doing with my podcast, as I'm sure you are too, is basically delivering content that is relevant to the market so that they understand that I understand.
That's really great advice. Yeah, I say something like marketing is actually very simple. It's delivering the right message to the right people at the right time and in the right way, and solving the right problems which actually matter to them. So that's a little bit like your bat signal, and it all ties in with having an understanding for who the niche is, who the people in that niche are, what their needs and aspirations and frustrations are, how they like to communicate, and then understanding their problems and delivering information that helps that.
I have an example in my mind that came up today. Maybe this would be helpful also. And I'm just using myself as the example. I mean, I'm a content machine, as you noted earlier, and I am just constantly coming up with content, and I don't even have enough time to disseminate all of it or to put it all into a format that could be delivered, which is fine with me. I don't have to, but I have plenty. And one of the things I was noticing today, I have these coaching groups, and one of them is about content marketing. It's an accountability group for people who want to create content but aren't sure exactly what to say and can't bring themselves to do it enough, or they put it off. So I have this group, and we meet every other week. And we were talking today about how once you have content, then you have to get it in front of the right people. It can't just be on your blog, because nobody's going to your blog. So where are they going online that your content can be distributed? And that often happens through a trade association or someone else's blog where, you know, the market already exists. And then one woman said, well, that's all well and good, but I'm not sure my content is good enough. I don't have enough self-confidence to actually pitch it to these places. And in fact, when I put it on my blog, I hope no one finds it. And I thought, that is the main problem, right? So what I hear as a business detective, because I'm always listening as a business detective, is I can talk all day long about how to pitch your content and how to create your content and what you should be talking about. But if your lack of confidence is getting in the way of you doing any of it, then you're not going to be able to use my ideas. So that means I have to take what I just learned and turn it into other content or other processes that will help people address what the real issue is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I was going to ask, and I think you've kind of answered the question there in that last sentence a little bit, but you mentioned that you're a content machine, and I definitely see that. I probably only read about 15% of all the material that I found on you when I was doing my research. I thought, wow, there's a lot of stuff here. So how do you actually go about producing all that content? I mean, a lot of people find it really hard to write anything or produce any sort of content. So how do you go about producing so much that your biggest issue is not being able to publish it all?
Right. So are you asking, how do I write it? I mean, there are lots of people who don't feel like they can write, and that's a huge obstacle, right? So, I mean, I don't have that problem because I like to write, and I studied writing in school and afterwards. And so I feel very confident in my writing. But even if someone doesn't feel confident in their writing, there are copywriters and writers who can help with that, especially if you have money to pay. And it's not always that expensive, or you can even barter for services sometimes. So I would encourage people not to use that as the obstacle to creating content. Plus, it isn't all about words. I mean, audio is huge, as you know. And it's really easy to have a podcast or to record yourself or interview people. And there's a very low barrier to entry for that. So to me, video and audio and infographics, if it's for designers, I mean, there's so many different media and formats for content that no one can use this as an excuse. I can't write.
Yeah. Well, that certainly is a really good point in terms of everyone has a smartphone these days, or virtually everyone. So it takes the press of a button to record a video. Most people have conversations. Most people answer questions for their clients. So there's the information that is actually of value.
Exactly.
And as you say, podcasting is a fairly easy entry way as well. And if you do an interview like this, then it's actually pretty easy to come up with content because it's a conversation that you have. You're asking a lot of questions of an expert who provides the information.
And again, you play the role of business detective, right? Hmm. And the thing about podcasting that I find amazing is that it is an incredible networking tool. I mean, if you talk
Absolutely.
About right? strategic networking, I just got off the phone actually with a woman who I had interviewed on my podcast last year about a conference she was putting on for freelancers. And today she wanted to invite me to speak at next year's conference.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that was not my intention.
That's right. Well, I've gotten invitations to come on online summits. One of them's publishing fairly soon. That came out of the podcast as well. So you're right, it's a fabulous networking tool and can be definitely used for strategic networking as part of your strategic networking thing.
Absolutely.
Another thing you mentioned about content, which I think is a really important point that might be worthy of a little bit more discussion, is around promotion. So a lot of people will write some content or publish some content, whether it be written material, blogs or articles or podcast or video, and then go on to the next one rather than really making sure that gets into the hands of the people to whom that information is of value.
So what you're describing there also falls into the category of this dilemma that I see people struggling with, which is the decision whether to work on their own material or to reach out and have contact with the market. And it is much easier, especially if you're having a little confidence problem, to work on your own material and just keep producing stuff or keep updating your website or anything like that and never, ever reach out to someone who might be interested. So to me, the promotion issue is all about, you know, knowing when you've got enough, which is not necessarily that much to start with. You can have one really nice, robust blog post or article, and then you can turn it into something else, or you can chop it up into five different parts and disseminate it through a trade association. But the important thing is finding the best place that your target market, your ideal clients are going to see it. Could be on LinkedIn also, since that's where people are. But ideally, you want it to be in the market that you're trying to reach.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really important advice, since that promotion is a very important part of the whole process. All right, this has been really fascinating, Elise. I could go on for ages talking marketing with you. I love the way you go about it, and there's so many great tips that you've given us already. I think it's time, though, we moved on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So there's five questions, and hopefully we'll get some insightful answers from you to those questions that will inspire people to go away and do something awesome today.
So I'll do my best.
What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Flexibility is the key to be constantly looking for how you need to change and adjust and shift and learn for whatever is coming next, because it is changing fast. And if we stop in one place for too long, we're going to be run over and made obsolete very quickly.
Yeah, great advice. And I love that you added learn to that, because I think that's part of how you make that change and keep ahead of the train, so to speak.
Absolutely.
What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I would say the example that I just gave about listening to my clients to find, not to ever think I understand them well enough, right? To be just constantly knowing that I don't know. So maybe a dash of humility, as much humility as is possible for an American like me, to, you know, just be constantly listening to the market for what, how I need to change and what I need to offer, and always reinventing myself.
Great advice. So, and that's consistent with that learning mindset as well.
Right.
So what's one of the resources that you use most often?
Resources. Are you thinking of things like Google Docs and Zencastr for my podcast, like tools? Is that what you have in mind?
Could be. It could be. Some people have said I use my daily journal. So it could be that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those are the things coming to mind. I try not to rely too much on the latest gadget or the latest software or app. I try to stay aware of what's coming, but it goes so fast. And again, things change so fast that I try not to become too attached to any of those resources.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is another little conversation we had this morning, actually, around using different tools as a distraction strategy.
Mm-hmm. But actually, another one does come to mind. I mean, I would say time tracking is really important because it's very easy to get distracted. And I do have a favorite time tracking software called FunctionFox. And it was made by creative professionals for creative professionals, but I think it's good for consultants as well. And it's just a nice way to know what you're actually spending your time on.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's a great exercise to do because sometimes it brings up a bit of a rude surprise if you reflect back on the week.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Communication. And, you know, that's kind of a no-brainer, but I would say a lot of people are reluctant to reach out too much. They don't want to nag people. They don't want to bother people. But if you're engaged with a client, often they may not respond to you and you may take it personally. But the reality is people are so overwhelmed these days by all the different ways people are trying to reach them, that you really do have to just be really persistent. People comment on my, what they call patient persistence, because I just stay in touch until you respond to me. I'm not going anywhere. I'm very serious about it. I try to use humor, but I don't give up. And I think that is really important.
That's great. So you don't take no as a personal insult or whatever. Yes, because I think a lot of people struggle a little bit dealing with no's.
Mm-hmm. But if you can see that it really has nothing to do with you, it's more about whatever they have going on, then you just keep on your track.
That's right. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, the way I think about this, especially in a world where there isn't really anything original, and there is a lot of competition. There's more competition now than there ever was. And that competition is a click away. So what is it about you that is different? It may be different for each person, right? It's not like you've got this thing that is different and no one else has it. It's more customized, if you will, to each person that you're trying to reach out to or trying to develop a relationship with. So I think it's about, again, waking up to and listening for what is it that this person is appreciating about me, and how can I do more of that, and how can I find a way to make that come through more quickly. I have an example, actually. One of my clients this morning said, "I just love the sound of your voice." And instead of taking it as a compliment, I said, "What do you mean? What do you hear?" And she told me what she heard, which is very useful information to me and gives me more information about her also. And so that's just an example of kind of how to listen and get yourself out of the way.
Yeah, that's a really good example, and it's consistent with your business detective approach, isn't it?
So, exactly.
Some people will kind of blush at the compliment. Other people will say, "Oh, thank you." But you've taken the next step and said, "Well, what exactly is it that you like? What do you hear?"
Right.
So what does it mean to you? I love that approach because it comes back to that whole human-to-human concept of marketing. And I think, you know, the modern marketing is very much around building those human-to-human relationships. So, you know, what's different about you and how's that important to your partner in your customer that you're working with? And it might be different for each different one.
And I would say, actually, though, I mean, you're talking about human to human, and of course, I totally agree, but it's in the face of this automation, this wave of automation that is invading marketing, in my opinion. And I resist automation, and I'm, you know, I can afford to do that because I'm running a one-person business and I don't need thousands of clients. I don't need to scale. I don't want to scale. But I am really not a big fan of automation because I feel like it takes the human out of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, I'm actually a big fan of automation, but not in a way that takes the human out of it. So our automations pretty much are repetitive tasks that are run internally. And we do use a little bit of automation in our marketing. So our newsletter goes out to a particular list each week, but the list is broken down. So we know that, you know, this particular information is of interest to this group of people. So there's still that human element to it. But you're so right. You can take the automation to the extreme, and there's so many tools out there now that completely forget about the fact that there's actually, you're a person, and there's actually a person on the other side of that interaction. And it's that human to human interaction that makes things actually work.
I have another example, actually, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Because I got people often pitch to me at, they want to blog on my blog. They want to be a guest blogger. And I got a pitch last week from a guy who was very friendly. And so it seemed from the tone of the email message that it was the person and he was writing directly to me. But the article ideas that he pitched were about dogs and cleaning up dog hair. And I thought, okay, he clearly did not take a look at my website. So, so, you know, this idea of
I think I got the same one.
Did you?
Yeah.
It was too funny. I had to use it as an example with my content group.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. I kind of ignore those, but I should actually use them as examples like that in the stories. Because you're right, people kind of just bombard whatever emails they can get their hands on and send stuff out. And they don't bother to go and look at your website or your blog and say, well, are you actually interested in cleaning up dog hair, or you have a business that's remotely related to that?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks, Elise. This has been so great. I've really enjoyed this. Give us that link again where people can find your material and also where people can reach out to you and say thank you for what you've shared with us today.
Of course, and thank you for the invitation. So it's marketing-mentor.com.